Assalamu alaikum everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Neema Dromaby, and I'm delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. Vortex of Truth is a show where we use fiction as a tool to spark empathy and create questions in the minds of our listeners as to what they themselves would do were they in the situations that our characters find themselves in. We also cover stories that should serve as mild warnings or help to explain and allow listeners to understand the struggles that others go through. Today, we continue our four-part series that will continue for the rest of Ramadan. We're exploring the different ways that Ramadan is experienced and celebrated by children in different circumstances. This week, we return to the mind of a refugee child, the same child who was the focus of our first episode. In the first episode, we mentioned the purpose of the series, and I would like to reiterate it now. In the series, we have been and will continue to try to look at some of the hardships faced by others that slip under our radars. Last week, we looked at the similarities exhibited by our two protagonists, and these were protectiveness towards parents, lying to spare parents and their feelings, maturity beyond the protagonist's age due to being forced to grow up far faster than they should have. And our previous episode looked quite extensively at the difficulty that can be felt by children who've had to accept hand-me-downs, so let's get back to that for a moment. And just imagine feeling like the fact that you're choosing secondhand clothing to be written on your forehead. Just imagine that everyone knows that you're dressed in clothing that doesn't belong to you, that is secondhand, that's been worn by someone else first. And now, whether or not people can tell when children are dressed in that kind of secondhand clothing that is ill-fitting and worn is not really the point, but the point is that these children do know it and they feel the difference between themselves and everyone else very acutely. And what's worse, they begin to question whether they themselves are second best, just like the things that they receive. That was the main point of our sketch last week. And this particular thing is not something that can be changed by a child. It's entirely out of their control, and it's something that they simply have to bear until their circumstances change. They can't refuse to go to school, and they can't show up in other clothing. They've got no control about the entire situation. And the lack of control is something that we're going to keep exploring today. We're going to start the sketch now. Here we go. They're so happy, all of them. Ma and the twins and all the other kids, it feels like. He wants to be like them, but when he looks for the happiness, it just won't come. It feels like he's trying to pull on clothing that's not his size, and no matter how hard he tries to make it fit to his skin, it can't. And the anger and the jealousy slip beneath it and wrap around him, dragging him down with them. Not every day is like this, it's true. For the most part, the days and nights are good, and he can lose himself in the infectious mood around him a little. Eventually, though, reality begins to intrude again, and he remembers. He remembers that this is not how things are supposed to be. He remembers that half his family is gone. He remembers that he's terrified that his mother will be next, and he'll be the one who has to take care of his brothers. And he hates himself for caring more about the fact that he'll have to work harder than he cares about the fact that his mother could die. Now, he's very anxious to have him make a friend. He knows this because she's told him so over and over again. She thinks that if he makes some friends, he will be less angry and less scared and less broken. And she's right, as Ma usually is. But he doesn't quite know how to make friends anymore. He's friendly with people. He hasn't become completely horrible. He goes to the school that's been set up, even though it's not very required. And it's not exactly good, because Ma wants him to set a good example. And he's not horrible or rude to any of the others. He talks when he's talked to. He smiles even on good days. He plays with his brothers and tries to learn things, even though he's not quite sure what the point is anymore. He's trying to do what his ma wants him to, and he's trying to pretend as though things can ever go back to anything like what they used to be. He can't stop wanting to go back. He's been told over and over again that he needs to move on, as though it's like leveling up in a video game. He has to move on and build a future, and he can't stay stuck, else he'll never go forward. But forward is not what he wants. Why does he have to go forward when forward looks horrible? He's trying hard to listen to his mother, to not be one more thing that adds lines of strain to her face. But he's not happy, and he can't pretend that he is. Ramadan is the worst, because before it was so bright. Now the light of it is dimming, like a candle that wants to go out. Maya's frustrated with him today. This morning she yelled at him. Yelled that he needs to stop being so obstinate. She apologized. She always apologizes. But then she made him sit down with her and tried to have a conversation. It wasn't quite a proper conversation because he didn't speak much, but his mind looked happier by the end of it, so maybe it was good enough. She keeps trying to figure out why he couldn't let go and get better like other people had, like she and the twins had. And he isn't trying to make it difficult for her when he says that he doesn't know. But he knows that it does make it difficult for her, so he apologizes every time. He doesn't know why he's stuck. He just is. He's promised his mother that he will try to cheer up and let himself be happy. She asks that he just let himself be a little happy. And he can be happy, a little. It won't be exactly what Ma wants, but he hasn't bothered to tell her that. The truth is, he is happy sometimes here, a little. He's happy, but the happiness is surrounded by stress and his anxious feelings and the scabbed hurt where he still misses everyone that they no longer have with them. All that can get through all that pain is a little bit of happiness. It's a quiet day today. Everyone is busy with something or another, and he's sitting by himself, waiting for his brothers to wake up. He's watching them today, and he knows they're going to complain about it when they open their eyes and see him. They think he's boring, and they'll want their Ma. He's going to have to distract them from the fact that Ma isn't there, or she'll probably arrive back to tears, and then everyone will have a headache. The twins always cry together, even if the one has absolutely no idea why the other is upset. That's what they always do. If one of them was without the other when the water walk started, the other one would start as soon as they got close enough to hear that a meltdown was going on. And twin crying is one of his least favorite things in the whole world. He has lots of strategies for trying to avoid it, and some of them even work. Today, since the twins have decided they want to play at fasting, at least until midday, he can't distract them with food. He can't bribe them with it either. And that means he's going to have to play a game with them. And the twins' favorite game is to wrestle. Except they don't want to wrestle with one another. No, they just want him to lie down on the ground and let them jump on him. He doesn't usually play this game with them, even if they whine. But today, he will. Today, his mom is trying to get herself seen by a doctor, and today, everyone is going to be nice and be happy and be well-behaved, even if it kills him to get them that way. And maybe, if he focuses hard enough on the twins, he can pretend that he's not terrified and ready to burst into tears himself. Maybe they can have a good day, and Ma's constant praying can have cured whatever it is that's wrong with her like it's supposed to. Maybe. Luqman wakes up first, already making noise 5 seconds after his eyes open and disturbing to her, and then he has 2 balls of energy bouncing around and asking him 100 questions a minute. What time is it? How come it's so hot? Can we go play? Where's Mama? He's having fun. He realizes this slowly as he's pretending to be a monster, grabbing at Luqman while his brother shrieks and giggles. There's no time to keep thinking about that unsettling fact, because Taha crashes into him, small fists smacking him until he lets go of Luqman, so that they can scurry away together to plot the next phase of the game that they've been making up all day. A moment later, they're jumping on his legs and back, still kicking and chattering at him. It's a good day, even when the twins start to whine because they're tired but don't want to take a nap. They agree eventually when he bargains that he'll sleep too, and soon enough they're all lying there together. And it's peaceful when he shuts his eyes and he thinks that he might be able to keep this going. Maybe he can move on like his mother's been asking him to. Maybe things can get better. It is Ramadan. this was his favorite time of year, and if he lets it, it can be again. A month of mercy. He falls asleep, remembering what it felt like when he was little and he curled up in his dad's lap while dad recited the Quran to him. He'd fall asleep sometimes and it would be warm and cozy. And he feels almost as warm now, with a little brother on each side of him, sprawling themselves out so that they can hold hands with him. It's his very first time flying in the dream. He's with his ma, and they're going to go see dad. Dad's been gone a week now, and he was meant to come back tomorrow. But dad can't come back anymore, so he and his ma are going to meet dad. He got pulled out of school in the middle of the day, and all morning his teachers had been giving him these big folders filled with worksheets for him to complete while he was away. Ma had packed them all in a suitcase, and she'd warned him to bring anything that he can't go more than a few weeks without, but to remember that they only have so much space. He's a little worried that he hasn't picked the right stuff, but they're only going to fit it, so it's not a big deal if he doesn't have exactly the right stuff. Dad will play with him if he gets bored, or Ma will, or there's always that TV that he can watch. The important part is that he's brought his favorite puzzles, and they're going to go see Dad again. He's missed Dad, especially since this time they haven't been able to call him every night and talk to him. They've only talked to Dad twice, and even then, it was just for a minute or two so that they could say they loved each other. Dad doesn't know anything that's happened to them the past week, and they don't know what's happened to him either. They buckle in their seatbelts, and he watches a nice flight attendant who looked at their ticket stubs explain how to buckle the seatbelt and where the jackets are. He stops paying attention after a little while and closes his eyes. He's really tired. It's hours past his bedtime, but he's not in trouble for being awake because they had to wait for the plane. He'd never tell Ma that he's tired, but he thinks she knows because she puts her arm around him and lets him lean against her. Then she starts running her fingers through his hair like she usually does when he's sick. It's nice. And we're going to be going to take our first commercial break for this program. We hope that you join us when we get back for the second half of Vortex of Truth for today. Assalamu alaikum everyone and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. We're reaching the second half of our program now and we're almost at the end of our sketch for today. As we mentioned in the first half of this program, our four-part series that we're currently running is to try and get you to understand and glimpse Ramadan through the eyes of different individuals. Our two protagonists are a child in a refugee camp and a child with parents in not fantastic circumstances in South Africa. Today we've returned to the child in the refugee camp and we've just finished a little segment with this child playing with his two twin little brothers. We're going to recap with the very last thing that we had at the first half of the show. Here we go. Now this particular part of the sketch is a dream sequence. They buckle in their seatbelts, and he watches the nice flight attendant who looked at their ticket stubs explain how to buckle the seatbelt and where the jackets are. He stops paying attention after a while and closes his eyes. He's really tired. It's hours past his bedtime, but he's not in trouble for being awake because they had to wait for the plane. He'd never tell Ma that he's tired, but he thinks she knows because she puts her arm around him and lets him lean against her. And then she starts running her fingers through his hair like she usually does when he's sick. It's nice. He wakes up to small feet in his ribs. Taha or Lukman have woken up and are using him as a trampoline. He tries to bat away the foot, but whichever child is attached to it pays no attention to him. Taha, stop it, he complains, taking a shot in the dark, at which one it is. Not me, Taha says instantly from somewhere across the room. He opens his eyes and sees his youngest brother cuddling up to their mother, who's laughing as she looks at them. Lukman, stop it, you're hurting me. Lukman flops down onto him. I'm excited, his voice is shrill. Mama says it's a celebration. And he turns to look properly at their mother, and she nods. We're going to celebrate tonight, okay? She says. The twins agree happily. He tries to join them, but the peaceful happiness of the day is evaporating. Ma doesn't look better. She looks exhausted, and she's pale. She's smiling, but there's something wrong with it. What did the doctor tell her? It feels like Lukman is still stomping on him. And we're done with today's sketch. As we said earlier, the series is meant to capture Ramadan and sort of give you a glimpse into how difficult it can be, as well as how good. So, our first episode spoke about the anger that the loss of control and the loss of a home can cause, and today we've looked at some other issues that are faced by the one protagonist in this series, the refugee child. Some of these issues are lack of medical care, feelings of depression and anxiety, lowered access to education, feelings of purposelessness, and the worry that you're caught in limbo because you're not where you were meant to be originally, and you're not really in a home again. You're in between, in a camp that's meant to be temporary until a place can be found for you. The instability of this kind of a situation can and does make people very anxious. Our sketch today was a little more lighthearted than the very first one from this character's point of view, and that was very deliberately done because life, even in terrifying situations, does begin to find highs and lows again. Human beings are very good at beginning to rebuild and adjust themselves to a new normal when they can let themselves. However, with that adjustment comes feelings of fear and guilt, because are they not moving on and leaving behind everything that they've lost by allowing happiness to creep back in? And the kind of question can be why many fight change when it happens again, because the very first hugest change was the change that cost them everything that they were used to, their families, their homes, their communities, everyone that they loved sometimes. And then we touched a little on medical issues in week one, and we've continued that today. Lack of access to medical care and a poor diet can make little illnesses that we would bounce back from in weeks or even days become fatal. Death tolls are always higher in countries where there isn't readily available medicine and sterile environments, and malnutrition and deficiencies make it even harder for the body to fight because there are no resources for it to draw upon when trying to help medicine work or when the immune system is trying to kick in. How often do we take a trip to the pharmacy or just grab a pill to deal with some sort of little sniffle or ache? And how many people in the world can't do that? It's staggering to think about. We also touched on education and the deterioration of it due to being in a refugee camp where it's not the main priority. And even when schools of a sort can and have been set up, curriculum is often very splintered because teachers are desperately trying to find a way to teach children across ages and skill levels. And just imagine how demotivating that would be for students who can't catch up, and how easy it would be for a student to give up on school if they're bright and they feel bored in classes with things that they've already covered are being taught. All right, next week will be our final episode in the series, inshallah, and we hope that you tune in to join us for it. As always, Jazakallah khair for joining us today, and we hope that you've enjoyed the show. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you're welcome to get in touch with me, Naima Zarawi, at theimperfectmuslimablog@gmail.com or under the handles theimperfectmuslima or Naima Zarawi on all forms of social media. We hope that you have a lovely day further, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.